We have a very interesting show today. Kind of a minority here. Two English-speaking, U.S.-based Valencia fans. Tim and Sam from the Amunt podcast. Guys, how are you?
Great. Hey, Jeremy.
Jeremy, great to be here. It's great to have another professional on. I always have to suffer through Tim, so this is excellent.
My goodness, this is going to just be a war, isn't it?
Yeah, anything goes. Anything goes, Jeremy.
Just going to be throwing bombs at each other throughout the episode. All right, I like it. So, a little feisty. I like to start these, especially when we have new guests on the program, with your background. So, Tim, you first. How'd you get into Valencia? What happened there?
Yeah, that's a good question. You know, Sam and I have known each other. We grew up with each other, and Sam actually was initially traveled to Spain and studied abroad in Valencia, and he came back. And of course, Sam likes to put on a pretentious air, and so he's speaking his Spanish, and he has his lisp going. Can you imagine having in Manassas, Virginia?
Oh my gosh!
But no, you in all seriousness, you would love it. You should come back and check it out. So we actually, after college, took a trip and spent time in Valencia, and it's not hard to really fall in love with the city. And then we went back, a second time as well. So it kind of started from there. And of course, the club is once you've been there and you're looking for a La Liga club to follow. Valencia is a great club to fall into.
Certainly a very interesting club. Very unpredictable air about your team, so to speak.
Yeah, with the managerial decisions, how we're going to play on a game to game basis, a lot of unpredictability for sure.
Yeah, I think it's interesting because with that team, anything goes. With your podcast, anything goes. I think it's a nice it's a nice reflection of Los Che.
I'm glad that you recognize that that's the reason why we've designed our podcast to be the way it is. It's not because we're sort of disorganized people or we're sort of, volatile personalities. It's more that we're just trying to match it to the essence of Valencia. That's right. Yeah.
Yeah, that sounds about right. So the podcast itself, how did you come up with the idea to do a podcast? How long have you been around? How can we listen to you?
Tim, I'll defer this to you.
Yeah. You know what? We've been following, chatting about Valencia for years now. And Sam texted me and said, "Hey, Tim, I have an idea." And I said, "Oh, God, what is it now? What are we getting into next with Sam?" And he said, "Hey, let's start, just talking into a microphone the way we do every week anyhow." And so it really just started from there. And we've been around since just November. You can follow us on Twitter. We're pretty active on Twitter. Sam has a lot of dad jokes coming out there, and of course we're on all of your podcast apps and all that good stuff as well.
Very good. So I am going to direct our listeners to listen to Tim and Sam. We're just 4 minutes in, and I can tell they're great guys, and I can tell there's yeah, there's just going to be some bombs thrown in this episode, and oh God, the dad jokes. Oh God,
the dad jokes. That's right.
They're the best dad jokes. They're so good. I really had a kid so that I could have the dad jokes, and they're like more make them more legitimate.
I'm just going to try to sidestep those whenever I can. Do I humor you guys or not? I don't know. We'll see how the episode goes.
Yeah, we'll play it by ear. I'm excited.
Yes. I'm not saying we're gonna improvise, but maybe we do. So let's talk about Friday night's game at Mestalla. It finished 2-2 between Valencia and Atletico. Not exactly what I was expecting. Usually when these two teams tango, it's not a great game to watch. Most games involving Atletico aren't great to watch. So what did you guys think of the result? Sam, let's start with you. Good result, bad result? You guys came back twice.
Yeah, it's hard to say going into this match. Valencia has had really excellent home form. So, a part of me thought yeah, we should win this match. Atletico hasn't been in great shape. However, we've been really unpredictable. Most of that's been away form. But, you know, this one was particularly a tricky match given how bad the last one was. I mean, I would say, you know, there's not a match that comes to mind that I thought was a worse performance than our last match against Getafe. So this, you know, coming into this one, I wasn't exactly sure how the players were going to react. And I thought, you know, watching the match, we could dive into the tactics probably later, but there was, you know, at certain moments of the match, it seemed like, wow, Atletico is going to win this one. Atletico is so dominant. And then at times it was, Valencia is so dominant. Atletico is, we're going to win. We're going to get a couple goals here at the end. So it was a very uneven match. I think there were a lot of different chapters to it. But overall, probably an okay result. I think it's the fact that Atletico got two goals means that now Atletico has the tiebreaker with Valencia if they're level on points at the end of the season. So that's pretty unfortunate for Valencia. But it's better to not give up 3 points to Atletico, given that we're vying with them for top four spot.
Yeah, and it's a very good note about the home form. Haven't lost there this year. And Mestalla is usually a really difficult place to go, especially for the big teams. What is it about Mestalla, you guys? I mean, it's a nearly a 100-year-old stadium. What is it about Mestalla? What's the secret juice there, the secret sauce?
You know, I'll just say Mestalla can be a really tough environment to come in for a visiting team because Valencian fans are so intense, but it can also be a really tough environment for the home team, right, depending on what's going on with the club. So, I mean, you know, you've seen years past where the Valencia fans have been very upset with the players, where we've had horrendous home form. So corralling the Valencia fandom is not easy. And, you know, I think this year it's a little surprising to me how dominant we've been at home because of, you know, the inauspicious circumstances in which the season started with Marcelino's firing, the Valencia fans really, very reasonably upset with Peter Lim and with Daniil Murthy. So it's been surprising to me how stark the difference is between home and away form. But I mean, it was fairly loud during the match yesterday. But even at times during the match, there was some whistling at our own players. They were whistling Parejo when he gave up the ball. This was after the Atletico had scored that second goal that Parejo was largely responsible for. But so, you know, it wasn't the perfect home the home reception that you would want.
And Tim, even with that Parejo giveaway, he still helps to create the second goal. Why is it that Parejo always seems to play really well against Atletico? Like every game, he just has one brilliant moment. The reverse fixture, he scores the equalizing goal with a late free kick. This time, he assists what ends up being the game tying goal for Condogbia.
You know, Danny Parejo has been doing this a lot this season. I'm the first one to sort of, I think, critique him. You know, this has been a theme this season for him. When he gets a lot of pressure on him, he's been tending to turn over the ball. But the thing about Parejo is when you do give him some space, he's just so capable of finding any player on any area of the field. So that second half, perhaps when the pressing loosened up, Atletico allowed him to get a little bit more space. I mean, he really, team, you know, game after game, he'll find ways to find players across the field. And that's really what he did in that second half, just off those set pieces and a few of those plays that gave you some chances. So it's just a theme, I think, with Parejo. I mean, he may whistle him 1 second, and then he'll play that pass that opens up for a goal the next. And so we tend to love him even despite the some of those turnovers and things, the nature of his game.
I think the last three games against Atletico, he has scored or assisted a goal in all three of them. So not so great for Atletico, great for you guys. But, I mean, I think Parejo is pretty criminally underrated, has been for years. A bit inconsistent in individual moments, but overall I think he's just a great player. Gonzalo Guedes came back for this game. How about that?
Oh, he did. And I thought he did very well.
It was good to see him.
We were just chatting about this beforehand, and you can see his pace. You know, this is what just the second game back for him, and had some minutes before, but this is really a lot of minutes for him. And we've really missed some of that pace when Rodrigo's not out. So I was very pleased by his form. I think he came out the 70th minute and just gave us a little bit of something before Gamero came on. I think, Sam, you agreed with that assessment.
Yeah, we talked a little bit about Guedes earlier today. I mean, he's a good player for us because he can play between the lines, and we don't have a lot of players that can do that. Mm-hmm. Gamero absolutely cannot do that. Maxi doesn't do that. Rodrigo does, and that's why Rodrigo is so fundamental to the way we play. But Rodrigo's been really poor in 2020, so getting Guedes, who can fill in that role, I think is huge for us, because when we don't have someone playing that role, we look really static, really predictable, and easier to defend. Just on that Parejo point, that pass in the like 92nd minute to Gaia in full stride, where Gaia plays it, and he intends to pass it, but it ends up being like a pretty close shot, was just spectacular. I mean, better than his assist. I mean, it was such a good pass.
Yeah. But Jeremy, going to Guedes, I mean, we've been plagued by injuries all season. So yeah. Just outside of his individual performance, it's great to have someone else just available for us. We've really been, hurt by that. So
yeah.
It's good to see him.
A lot of times availability is the best ability. And I would have more sympathy for you guys, but Atletico have been plagued by injuries for basically the past 2 years. And
about
2 weeks ago against Granada last week, which was a very, very bad game, Atletico were without 7 first team regulars and are still going to be without 3 of them for Liverpool this week. So yeah, the rash of injuries for both teams it's been really kind of nightmarish and really something you'd never want to see. I think all three of us, to the Kevin Gamero point, all three of us are familiar with the Kevin Gamero experience at this time. Yes.
Absolutely. Yeah. Well, it is nice to have dealt with João Felix. I mean, that's a nice nice little gift that we've had playing against you guys. So, we definitely are challenged with injuries.
And
Gamero. Oh, no, sorry. Go ahead.
Oh, no, go ahead. Go ahead.
Gamero's so hard for me to figure out, because so often Tim and I talk and I say, man, this guy, we got to get rid of him. He's so terrible. but then sometimes he looks really spectacular. I mean, that Levante match, we were down 2-0 this year, and I think he had 2 goals and 2 assists. I mean, we ended up winning 4-2, and he was so good. But, you know, when everything's not quite right, he seems to really struggle. He really struggles against physical players. Against Atletico, it just seemed like he's not going to be able to do anything against this defensive line.
Yeah.
Although he did get an opportunity for a goal from that Ferran pass. He spotted it late and couldn't hit it right. But yeah.
Yeah, it's not new from Gamero. I've seen a few of those he has missed. So hard for me to feel for him in that moment. Gamero, when you give him some space and conditions are right for him, he does really, really well. But some games where you close him down and teams are just a little bit hard or physical, he struggles, and that's when we need him most. Love-hate relationship, I think, for me, for Gamero.
Yeah, he definitely has that unfortunate proclivity to disappear, and that was what happened to him his 2 seasons at Atletico. I was kind of a Kevin Gamero sympathizer, an apologist. His first year was pretty good, inconsistent, but he did score 12 goals in the league. The year after, 5 of his, I think, 7 league goals were game winners. A good few of them were penalties. But inconsistent player for sure, but he has to be in the right positions in the right climate. I think that's exactly right. You mentioned Ferran Torres, and my God, was he good. I think this is where he is in his development is kind of where Atletico were hoping João Felix would be at this time this year. Ferran's really good, isn't he? He just gave Logi and Saul a devil of a time on the wing. Logi had to come out just after halftime because he was doing so poorly.
Oh, yeah. Once I think he split those two. I think Logi was one of those.
Yep.
Yeah.
Yep.
Yeah, that's when I think Logie sat down in the field and started maybe to cry a little bit and then take him out. Fran had this game for me. Fran really broke out to a new level, and I think will continue to like get a lot of recognition and visibility. I mean, he's had great performances, but he seemed to be undefendable, unplayable this game.
I thought Jeremy, I'd like your take on this. I thought this was a really weird decision from Simeone to take out Lodi. I actually thought Lodi did get burned on that split, but Ferran, I thought there was a really interesting game within the match between Lodi and Ferran, and they were doubling him pretty well. And up until that point, he hadn't really been able to do anything. And then eventually three different players marked him, right? It was Lodi first, and then you moved your right back to the left back,
yep.
Right? Arias.
That was Arias, yeah.
You took, when he came out, then Saul came out. I mean, and the way Saul played against him, I mean, it really looked as if Ferran was going to score a couple of goals there. He had two pretty good opportunities for assists. I thought this was a really game changing a decision was to pull Lodi out, because I had thought that he'd actually done fairly decently against Ferran, and afterwards, even though Ferran did split him that one time, the game changed, and you know, Atletico didn't end up scoring on any of those opportunities from Ferran, but easily could have, and it seemed like an odd substitution from Simeone.
Yeah, those substitutions really changed the game. I mean, Atletico had about a 20-minute span where they went through three different left backs, and even for Atleti this year, where there's been a lot of criticism doled out Simeone's way for the way he's his man management, for the way for the tactical setup, whether it's too much of a relic or not. But this was weird even for our standards this year. Lodi comes out. Santi Arias moves to left back, which he's capable of playing, but then that doesn't work, so Saul comes on. Cholo has done this year with Lodi. I mean, he's only 21 going on 22 years old. Defensively, teams have really picked on him this year defensively, and he hasn't always been able to handle it. So I understand why there's some hesitance to keep him out there, especially on a yellow card for 90 minutes. But yeah, it was really strange to see, you know, three different left backs, and I really hate when Saul plays there because it just completely inhibits everything else he is capable of doing. But
yeah,
he's been playing there for 2.5 years now as the backup left back because we don't have another natural left back. So I feel for Saul when he has to play back there.
Yeah, and Saul looked really, I mean, you're absolutely right. He couldn't do anything offensively at that point. And he was not posing a threat defensively, right? I mean,
no.
Ferran was having his way every time he had the ball. It was a really odd change because in that first 65 minutes, you know, we were really trying to go to Ferran, but Ferran was losing the ball most of the time because, you know, Atletico was surrounding him. Lodi was doing a pretty good job. But you know, that last 25 minutes of the game was totally different. Even though we didn't score from it, because you know, Ferran had just so much opportunity, so much space.
It was very strange, and Saul kind of had a hand in both of Valencia's goals. The first goal with this cross to the back post to a completely unmarked Maxi Gomez. Saul is late coming over, and then Gabriel's header catches both center backs just completely cold. The second goal. Condogbia was Saul's man from the free kick, and Saul just loses him when the ball's in the air. Marcos Llorente has to chase him down. Just a really, really bad game for Saul, and his development under Simeone is one of those where he hasn't really progressed in a couple years, and that is one of the most damning indictments of where Atletico are right now, is that not only are there a bunch of new players to have to bed in, but some of the guys who have been stalwarts the past 2-3 years haven't really grown much. I mean, Thomas Partey, who scored an incredible solo goal, is really the only one that we could somewhat conclusively say has made a lot of progress the past couple of years.
Yeah, Jeremy, I'd love to get your thoughts on first half versus second half. I think one of my hypotheses around Lodi was first half, you guys defend so well, and I think every area of the field, it would be two or three
Atletico players versus one of ours. And I think it was Vitolo and Llorente really defending all over the field. And perhaps that second half requirement of them is a real big ask. Like, they had to defend heavily across the field. And then that started to get Ferran a little bit more space. They couldn't quite transition across the field. So Simeone maybe saw something in Lodi's eyes. He started to maybe get a little tired or something. But I'm curious what you saw second half, because I don't think tactically Valencia changed much.
I thought Atletico, for most of the first half, were very, very good indeed. Didn't really have another great chance outside of Marcos Llorente's goal, but were very good until that equalizer, until that set piece. Thomas comes right back up the field and scores. But the second half, I think, was all Valencia. All Valencia. And they finished with 63% possession, which is not so rare for Atletico to concede, but I think it's been pretty rare for Valencia this year to ring up that kind of possession. And Atletico have this really nasty habit, especially away from home, of trying to sit on a lead or trying to sit on a result and not push forward, not try to kill off the game or kill time. Atletico have this really nasty habit of setting up in the low block and trying to defend their way to a result. And the defense isn't as good consistently as it has been in previous years. We've had to rely on Oblak a lot to make, you know, huge saves like he made in the 89th minute. We've had to rely on him when our defense kind of falters. So, yeah, it was, I think, truly a game of two halves. And Simeone's substitutions were not really great. Morata comes on for 25 minutes. He misses a huge chance. And Atletico don't have another one.
Oh, yeah. Hey, Jeremy, I have a question for you.
Shoot.
How long have you really wanted to be a Valencia fan? You've been an Atletico fan for probably your whole life. Do you, like, a few times a week, you're like, gosh, when am I going to make the transition to be a Valencia fan?
I think I'm good with the way this team treats me. I think I appreciate the...
Yeah, we're all somewhat of abused by our teams, aren't we?
I appreciate the effort, yeah. You guys, but I think I'm all right with the way Atletico have kind of just treated me like a rag doll over the years.
That's great.
I think I'm... Yeah.
Yeah, that Morata chance, though, was scary. A great save by Dominic, but I think I felt like that was going to be one of the chances. You had great... I mean, unbelievable cross to find Morata there.
Yeah, and Brusalco hasn't made a cross like that in like 2 years, so that was stunning.
Stunning cross, yeah, it was great. I couldn't decide whether the cross or the save was better. I think it was the cross.
Yeah, and it puts Morata in a great position, and like Morata is kind of want to do, he misses the great chance. I mean, this is the Morata experience, and Atletico have had to rely on him all year because of Costa's injury and João Félix's inconsistencies and injuries. Morata's had to be the guy, and throughout his career, Morata has kind of made a habit of, you give him three chances, he may only score one of them. And for a team like Atletico, whose attacking system doesn't really lead to very many chances, this is kind of what happens.
Yeah, I've never been a huge fan of Morata over the teams he's played for, because just for that reason, he just doesn't feel quite threatening enough, you know? So when he came in, I'm like, okay, well, if we can just prevent that one chance he has, he may not get a lot of other chances and really start something. You almost have to give him a really easy tap in or so to speak. He doesn't really create a lot. So I think that's probably frustrating for you.
Yeah, and that's a lot of money spent on him. Yeah, we really need to stop doing business with Chelsea, because that's $120 million spent on Morata and Costa, just for Morata to be all right and Costa to be a disaster.
Yeah, we should all never do business.
Yeah, really have to stop doing business with Chelsea.
I was just going to ask you, Jeremy, one thing that was really striking to me about this match, and you know, I've watched a little bit of Atletico, but when the announcer said, you know, we scored, to think that a few years ago that we would score two goals, that their two goals would come from set pieces, I would have said, oh yeah, Atletico scored two goals from set pieces and Valencia scored two goals from play. But the announcer said that Atletico has given up more goals in set pieces than anyone else in La Liga this year. And I just thought that blew my hair back. That was an unbelievable statistic given,
you know, the identity of this team that I always think of that's so tough in those situations. The other really striking takeaway for me, you know, I actually didn't see this as a game of two halves quite like that, because I actually thought even after we scored the first goal, we were posing a lot of pressure, but just Atletico was doing a phenomenal job defensively. And I thought that up until even past when we scored, you all still looked really dangerous. I actually thought Atletico looked as if they were going to score right after we equalized for that second goal. There was like that 5-minute spell where Atletico is coming really hard.
True.
Party has an opportunity, and I was really scared that we were going to lose that tie. But then I would say about the 65th minute, it just looked as if Atletico was out of gas defensively. And that's not something that I'm ever accustomed to seeing. I mean, Atletico is so good at playing that way defensively throughout the entire match. And you spoke to it, right? Our center midfield does not control matches, but Kondogbia and Parejo plays every minute of our season, they were able to control the center midfield, which I thought was really surprising and unlike any Valencia Atletico match that I've watched previously, right? Like, Atletico's the one dominating at least in the center of the pitch. Mm-hmm. We might have some advantage on the wings and with some of our backs, but you know the tempo is going towards Atletico. So I thought that first 65 minutes Atletico is going to be really dangerous for Liverpool, and then that last 25 I thought, oh wow, like this team is not the same team that I remember with against Bayern Munich and against Arsenal, that like is a team that just survives, that struggles through this exhaustion, is able to get a result. So I was wondering if that was unique to this match, or if that's been a longer trend this season.
Yeah, that's been a theme. That's been a trend the past couple of years, honestly. And it's become even more prominent this year because of the rebuild and because of all these new players that have come in for all that money. Atletico, in that sense, are kind of just another team now. The hallmarks of Simeone's first few years. I mean, 3 years ago, Atleti would have come to Mestalla, and this would not have been a problem. Atletico would have locked it up, would have won 1-0, and would have gotten out of there with 3 points. Now, this game, when it opens up, things become looser, and Atletico just do not have the central midfield presence or that kind of steel that they had when Gabby was around, that they had when Raul Garcia was around, when Thiago was around. Atletico just don't quite have that attitude anymore. And the set pieces, Atletico have conceded 4 times from a corner in the league this year, 4 times from penalty or free kicks. That's half the goals Atletico have conceded have come from set pieces. And that just never, ever would have happened. Atletico used to do that to other teams.
Right.
And that is now... That's now the reality. Atletico just cannot score on their own set pieces and just leak goals when conceding them. And that is sadly, that's been the downward trend. And it's a big reason why Atleti have drawn as many games as they've won this year in the league.
Yeah, I know. All those draws. I mean, you've only lost 4 games.
Yep.
It's incredible. 10 draws. Sam and I have been curious. Do you feel this is sort of a rebuilding down moment just for Atletico, given just the pace of Atletico for such a long time? Or do you feel this is now Simeone losing his sort of grip on the club, given he's been there for just such a long time? It's so difficult for coaches to stay at a club with such success.
Yes, and especially from the Valencia angle, it's very hard to see a coach stay there for more than 2 years. And Simeone's been there 4 times as long. So, this is kind of the great debate now. Is Simeone's time really, truly coming to an end? Is this just a year of transition that we need to kind of push on through and hopefully get fourth, maybe third if Getafe falls off or if Sevilla's traditional springtime struggles continue? That's kind of the great debate that's going on in Atletico circles right now. There have been some whispers that, okay, maybe this is the end. There was the great vote of confidence from the club CEO a couple weeks ago after the Copa del Rey humiliation. That the vote of confidence is usually not very good, but Simeone has built up a lot of credit in the bank, and he's the highest paid coach in Europe. It's going to be tough you can't really sack him because of his status with the club. But my personal kind of belief and inclination is that this is the end of the cycle, and Atletico have had issues with the attacking structure and philosophy and tactics for years. Atletico's struggles away from home are nothing new. This year they have become even Atletico away from home are even more disastrous this year than they were in previous years. Just 3 wins from 12 in La Liga on the road. Yeah. And in La Liga the past 21 weeks following that perfect 3-0 start, Atletico have won 7 of the past 21 games in the league. And coaches have been sacked for less. And I'm not saying Simeone should be sacked. Far from it. He's a legendary figure, the greatest coach this club has ever had. The way he has grown the club into a powerhouse is just, it was so unlikely when he took over. But cycles come to an end. Not every coach is Ferguson. Not every coach is Wenger. And even Wenger stayed way too long at Arsenal. And yeah. Simeone's got a contract for 2 more years. There would have to be some kind of mutual agreement. But my personal belief is that this is the end of the cycle and someone else needs to come in and kind of change things, just freshen up the ideas. And that's what it takes sometimes. It doesn't take a technically, tactically superior coach. Sometimes it just takes a new voice.
Yeah. You know, it's so interesting. I mean, you guys, I think a lot of it is just the character. I think of when Atletico, I think of the character of that team. Because you guys still finished second last year, second the year before. Like, Valencia in some ways would love those results.
Yes.
But I feel like, I mean, you're still fourth, 4 losses, but it's like that character isn't there. And I'm sure that's what a lot of fans feel.
That's exactly right. That the courage, the heart, the fearlessness just isn't there anymore. And it wasn't really there last year either. And that is just a major concern, that the mentality is kind of disappeared. And that's what I mean when I say Atletico are kind of just another big team at this point. There's nothing really that makes Atleti stand out. Not anymore. Defensively, yes, they're still very good. Most of that is down to Oblak. But Simeone can still build a defense. Our structure is still good. Felipe Montero was our signing of the summer. Defensively, overall, I'd say we're fine. It's the attack. A goal a game. Just over a goal per game. 2 of the promoted teams have scored more than Atleti. I mean, that kind of sums up where we are.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And I will say, though. Oh, no, sorry. Go ahead, Tim.
No, go ahead. Go ahead.
I was going to say that the defense was worrisome to me, though, yesterday, right? Like, that was what was really striking to me, is that last 25 minutes. We didn't score, but
it looked like you were.
It looked like we were, right? Like, I mean, Ferran had a couple of balls that weren't quite right, but then he had 2 passes that were on the foot of our strikers that we just couldn't get down. We just couldn't get our head over. And I mean, those should have been goals, right? I mean, so I was surprised, because they looked so strong defensively up until that point. I mean, those you know, with the exception of those set pieces, and the second one was super unfortunate, I think, from an Atletico perspective, that Kondogbia like tripped and fell and like backed the ball in. Although I do think he was probably fouled there. I think that probably would have been a PK if he didn't score. But it was a bit unfortunate from an Atletico perspective. But that last 25 minutes, I was really struck by. And you know, I think going into this Liverpool match, though, that there were such good sensations from that Atletico team that, if I was a Liverpool fan, I would still be pretty concerned going into this match, because this all has the sort of recipe for like a classic Atletico 0-0, 0-1 tie. It reminds me of sort of that Bayern Munich tie. I brought up that Arsenal one, not because Arsenal was near that level, but because in that first leg, Atletico was down to 10 men,
yep,
like the very early on, and they held on that whole match, and then Antoine Griezmann scored that goal at the end, which was, it was like, wow, you know, what a team this is. It also showed what a team Arsenal was. Like,
yeah,
Arsenal
right.
was horrendous. but you kind of think that perhaps that team could maybe get sparked with such a big match like Liverpool coming out.
That's the hope. That's the hope, because there's no other chance at silverware for Atletico. And Champions League qualification is a little under threat, right? I mean, Valencia are only 2 points back. and Atleti have head-to-head. Yeah, I think you're right. Atleti have head-to-head. But just 2 points behind Atletico and 4 points behind Getafe, even though Getafe just absolutely thrashed you guys the week before. About Valencia, you've obviously had nearly 6 months to between managers. What have you made of the tactics overall, not just from this game, but in kind of the grand scheme of things? What has impressed you about Celades in getting through to the as group stage winners, now getting to face Atalanta in the Champions League, kind of hanging around the European places? What has impressed you most about the job he's done?
Well, Sam, you go first, and I'll add.
You know, Jeremy, I think it's his sideburns. You know, we talk about
his great sideburns. Yes, sideburn game is on
seems
point.
To have a high correlation with our results. Yeah, he cut it one time, and we had a really bad spell. But I think overall, one, he came in and he didn't disrupt the locker room. I think he knew he was coming into a difficult position, and I think he gave a lot of deference to the players and the leadership of the locker room. We got thrashed by Barcelona, but after that, I think the team rebounded very well in a very difficult time. Two, we talk a lot about his tactical flexibility. Marcelino was sort of stubborn in this way, and we, you know, we experienced a lot of grinding out of games. We got results, but it was tough in some of those situations. I think what we've seen in this season is tough first halves, and whether or not he's just leading them and being a leader in the locker room, or he's making adjustments throughout the game, we've seen Valencia really make comebacks and changes in the second half. So I think I can speak for Sam, have been very, very pleased with Celades. Especially, I was concerned with his experience. You know, he's not a guy who's coming with a lot of or any real La Liga first team managerial experience. So yep. Despite that, I think I've been very pleased by Celades. And, you know, if you listen to him, he's a great speaker. I think he says a lot of the right things. He defends the players. And so he's just overall, I think, a likable and respectful guy as well.
Yeah, I think that's dead on those two fronts. And Tim said him in the right order too, right? Like, we are so impressed with how flexible he's been. He changes formations. He swaps his wingers. I think a lot of his in-game tactical changes are usually effective. You know, that Getafe match, Tim and I talked about, that it was really depressing because he didn't, you know, the game begged for a tactical change and he didn't make it. But overall, he's been really good at in-game adjustments. But it's worth just pointing out how bad the situation was that he came in. He was the guy that came in to replace Marcelino, that had negotiated with Peter Lim while Marcelino was the coach. There was 1,000 reasons for this club to absolutely hate him. And he had a really demure personality. He made it all about the players, and you know, he threw his full support. And the way they reacted when they beat Ajax and they won the Champions League group was like, this guy's our family. You know, Rodrigo had that line like, he's our family. He's been one of us. We've been on this project for 3 years. He's like, Celades hasn't been there for 3 years, but it was like Celades was seen as a continuation from Marcelino rather than as the person that was the person that led to Marcelino being fired, right? Like, he's it's like your mom breaks up with your dad, and then the new dad, you're like, yeah, he's been my family forever. It's like, no, he hasn't. He hasn't been your family forever. He actually broke up your family, yet he's done such a good job that you think that he's been part of your family forever. So that's really remarkable what Celades has done to win over the players in such a short period of time.
Like, this season could have very easily gone down the Gary Neville rabbit hole.
Absolutely.
A few years ago.
There was a lot of not only just anger because of what Marcelino had accomplished, but I think there was a lot of fear and nervousness around what this season will look like. And we were really, really, we have a lot of PTSD around Neville. And I think a lot of fans were worried this would happen again. But here we are. I'm very, very happy with the results thus far.
Yep, still hanging around there. Rodrigo, is he ever going to leave? Valencia, because now the three biggest teams in Spain have all tried to get him or had him in Real Madrid's case, but he's still there. Is he ever going to leave?
Never.
Well, I'll say there you go. He'll leave if any of you actually come in with an offer with money. You know, Atletico tried to buy him, and then it was revealed that it was going to be a loan deal with some sort of purchase option. And then Barcelona did the same thing where they wanted to buy him. And it seems that, like, so much of this is Jorge Mendes trying to make a buck, and nobody's actually putting in a legitimate offer. So I think if there's a legitimate offer that comes in the summer for $60 million, Valencia would probably sell, but it has to be an actual offer, not a way for Jorge Mendes to maneuver four players so that he could actually get Bruno Fernandes to Man U and make more money in the process.
Boom. Tell him, Sam. Tell him.
Go off. Go off, King.
He loves Rodrigo, but we do think that, you know, perhaps at this, you know, this summer might be a good time to reevaluate where the team is, and it could be a good option to sell him. He's 28, going on 29. It would be good value at $60 million, and I think he's been very good about sort of just letting these things play out.
Yeah, definitely.
So I think he could go either way. So yeah, I don't think we never want to get rid of him. I do think we just want a fair deal, and you know, some cash. We've got to have some cash with Ford Rodrigo.
Yes, considering you guys were in the red this summer, and the cash is important. And Rodrigo, pretty much every interview he gives or every mixed zone appearance he makes, he talks about that he loves this. It seems to me like he loves the club, that he really feels like he's become one of the leaders, that he's part of the family. And that, I think, could be another aspect of this, is he really loves playing at Valencia.
Yeah, he does. He absolutely does. And, I mean, it reminds me of a situation like David Silva, where David Silva was like, I love it here. I mean, David Silva was a little bit different because he was a youth player, but he was like, I love it here, but if they need to sell me for their own purposes, like, if they can sell me for enough money that they can build a better team, then they should. And I think that's Rodrigo's position. I mean, you saw the way he celebrated that second goal against Barcelona when it seemed as if the next day he was going to go to Barcelona. He definitely reacted as if, this is my club. That's not my club. This is my club. But I think he's, you know, he appreciates that if a legitimate offer comes in, you know, he might need to leave. There's a great statement from our president when he was doing this, when he was like in Barcelona negotiating this ridiculous potential transfer. And afterwards he said, we will only sell Rodrigo if it is an offer with guaranteed money. what does that mean? Like, what's the alternative? Like, you know, potato chips?
I mean, it's such money.
A ridiculous statement. We will only sell if they make an offer with money.
Because that's what Atletico tried. That's what Atletico,
just such a ridiculous statement.
That's what Atletico tried to do, was they wanted to sign Rodrigo, but they had to get rid of Angel Correa first. So they made an offer like, here, we'll pay you later. Give us the player, we'll pay you later. Which, like, no, that's not going to work.
It's not going to work.
There was a rumor that Barcelona was going to buy Valencian oranges over the next 10 years to get this deal through.
Totally fair.
To boost the local economy. And certainly we said no to that, although it does seem enticing.
I think that's a totally fair offer. You guys were fools to miss out on that. Man. So let's look at what's ahead. Atletico playing Liverpool this week, which is leading to some nerves. I think Atletico are one of the rare teams that could actually trouble Liverpool, but it, psychologically, and in terms of physical fitness, we'll see what happens there. You guys have a very intriguing tie against Atalanta, who are just going nuts with scoring goals. I think they're leading Serie A in goal scoring. Came out of nowhere to come out of that group with Manchester City. How are you feeling about the tie? Tim, we'll start with you.
I am excited about this tie. I think most of the fans were excited, and just as well, Atalanta fans were excited to tie against us. I think, you know, we talked a bit about this. Atalanta are in a similar situation, I think, that Valencia, and that we are both in great form. I think what is exciting about this is Atalanta is an inexperienced side. And what we've seen from Valencia is we can really, really rally in these games. I mean, we've seen it in this Atletico game. And perhaps if we can limit them and frustrate them initially and prevent them from getting a few early goals, we can really, really have a good chance even away. Now, what's scary is we can be really overloaded in the midfield. And when Parejo doesn't get a lot of space and he can turn over the ball, and if they get a few early goals, it really could turn into a 4-1 game, I think. So I'm excited. I'm bullish. But I am cautious and really looking at that first half against Atalanta.
Sam?
Oh, sorry. I had muted my phone.
Yeah, I think I'll echo what Tim said. I'm this is a scary match to me because of how dominant Atalanta has looked. But you know, it's really, I think I'm really scared about the first 10 minutes or first half an hour of this first leg, because you know it could be 4-0 Atalanta and our defense could wither. Or if we show some steel, if we show some resilience, you know, perhaps we have a bit more experience in these big game matches than Atalanta. So maybe we'll show ourselves to be sort of the more mature team, which is something that saying that about Valencia is saying something really about Atalanta, right?
perhaps, yes.
But what's really concerning to me is our center backs, and this is what's I think the biggest unknown is that we're going to play with Diakabe and Mangala presumably in this two-legged match, and we've never played that tandem together in a game this season. So Mangala's only played a few minutes. He did play pretty decently against Atletico. I thought Atletico would press him a bit more though, since he's not super comfortable with the ball at his feet. Diakabe the game before had a really terrible match against Atletico, and a really bad match the game before that against Granada. So, you know, because Garay's injured and Paulista has got a red card and is out for both of these matches, you know, going in with this tandem I think is pretty concerning. We'll see how they fare. But, you know, against a really dangerous Atalanta squad, I'm definitely concerned about that matchup.
It's going to be very – there could be a lot of goals here. It's going to be very interesting. With the state Valencia's defense is in, this could be really back and forth. For Atletico's tie, Liverpool are very clearly the favorites, as they should be. When you have won 25 of 26 Premier League games, you tend to be considered the favorites. And it's going to be extremely difficult. There's really no way around it. But the hope is that Atletico can thrive off being – the underdogs, whereas the Valencia-Atalanta tie could be considered kind of even, could be up in the air. This one seems pretty squarely to fall into Liverpool's hands. If Atletico can set up in this low block and kind of stifle them for 60, 70 minutes, there is a chance here that they could spring a surprise. But an away goal from Liverpool will probably kill the tie. But Valencia are in an interesting position because of that first leg being on the road. An away goal there, and you look pretty good coming home to Mestalla. So we'll see if both our Spanish teams come through it.
Yeah, I wouldn't count out Atletico in that match against Liverpool.
Not
I think
entirely,
that Atletico.
No.
I was thinking that in the first two thirds of the match yesterday, I thought, man, this Atletico team could give this Liverpool squad a lot of problems. So yeah, we'll see. It could be a game changer for Atletico in that a good result here, even if they don't get through Liverpool, could give them new belief going into the rest of the season.
That is the hope. Where do you guys see Valencia ending up this year? Another appearance in the Champions League, Europa League?
I think firmly fourth.
I think so. I think fourth is it. You know, I do want to see how Getafe looks so good. They look so good against us. I'm curious how they will continue through the end of the year, but I'm still very bullish we will end fourth. And Jeremy, I will say, I think defensively for Atletico, perhaps we're a little tough on them. You know, your offense is your first line of defense. And what I saw with Atletico, given the challenges up front, I mean, it puts so much pressure on your defensive shape and your midfielders and defenders.
Yeah.
I just wonder if you had Jao Felix out there, if you had, you know, everyone fit, you would just have more opportunity to keep the ball and stay up front, give those guys a little bit of a rest when you are in possession. So I really think that could be a big element of what the challenges you're seeing defensively, because that first half was like just a really, really great performance from Atletico.
Yeah, and they can still bring it in certain instances, but it's just a matter of when this team is going to bring it and when this team is going to be healthy and whether or not they can actually hold the ball for some length of time. It's not going to be against Liverpool. Liverpool are going to bring up 75% possession, most likely. If Atletico could just score two goals like every week, that would be great. And this team wouldn't really have much of a problem finishing third or fourth. But it's going to be a very, very interesting remainder of the season for both clubs here. Valencia have this air of unpredictability, so to speak. And Atletico have been really kind of flat for most of this year. So we will see if we'll see each other in the Champions League again next year.
Well, I was going to say you can bring us both back on if both the Spanish teams get through and say we find ourselves together in the quarterfinals of Champions League
yes.
this year.
Yes, we could. That is a fair point. God, that would be crazy. Yeah, all three of us would just be going at each other.
That'd be a treat. That'd be such a treat. Yeah, we could really bring the Amut style in this pod, Jeremy, and get at each other's throats.
Oh, yeah. Much more ad hominem attacks would be good.
I would come with all the smoke. I would come just fully loaded. Well, guys,
bring the heat. We love it.
That's I think a pretty good place to stop. We've been going for a while now. This was great. This was an awesome pod. Tim, Sam, thank you so much for joining me. This was fantastic. And please let us know where our listeners can follow you and the podcast.
Yeah, Jeremy, thanks so much. This has been really fun. We'd love to be back on. You can follow us at Amunt Podcast, at Amunt Podcast on Twitter. That's where Sam's dad jokes come from.
That's right.
Also, you can follow us on Spotify, all of the podcast apps you guys have. Amunt, the Bat Boys Valencia CF podcast. We have weekly episodes come out on Monday mornings. And that's it. Thanks a lot again, Jeremy, for having us. This has been fantastic. You're a great podcast host. We can learn a lot from you.
Thank you very
much. That's right.
And thank you guys for coming. I gotta be thanking you guys. We will have to do this again. This was so much fun. And Sam, I commend you for keeping the dad jokes holstered.
Yeah, that's true. I had several that I was about to relieve, but I kept them in.
You know what?
I kept them in. Tim provided so much bad anodyne material that I there was no real great opportunity for a sexy dad joke.
It's the end of the show. Let's see. No, not much context here, but let's see if you can get one out here.
Oh, putting me on the spot, Jeremy, this is really uncomfortable. I should have had more. I have 10 written on my hand, but none of them are suitable for the moment. So I'll have to just start the next podcast that we do together with a nice dad joke.
Keep that in your notes. And as soon as we reconvene, I'm going to regret doing this, aren't I?
You'll regret it. You'll regret it. It'll be good.
Thank you guys again.
All right. Sounds good. Thanks.